podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
And tame again.
Crank up the music. Charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
Guy Mowbray's Gladiators goal shout. Free kick techniques on Coronation Street. The use of over to you in Premier League title races. Can you take a goal well with your head? Can liftoff be anything other than going 1-0 up? A 4 out of 10 Sky Sports montage gimmick. Unprecedented Anfield sucking. Being sent off mid-chant. A very specific and unifying crowd noise at Villa Park. Xavi's Contenedores Superiores. And some forbidden keys in grey. Brought to your ears by Goalhanger Podcasts. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry. This is the Adjudication Panel. And on this Adjudication Panel, it's Nick Miller. Hi, how you doing?
How are you? Business end of the tour.
Yeah.
As we record.
Yeah, it's the last stretch. Bristol on Monday, London on Tuesday. And you're going to be there in the Union Chapel, I understand.
Watching brief. Because if anyone was, you know, holding out hope, and I know there have been many fans out there that I was going to be involved in the show, it's just as a punter, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, don't make me feel bad about it, but you're on the VIP guest list and that's the main thing, and you're going to be in and around the show, and that's the main thing. People will be there and you'll be there too, so you can meet them. They can meet you. It's going to be great.
Oh, Christ. Yeah, well, come and say hello if you want, sure.
Don't worry. You're in the show to an extent, so it's, don't worry. Hanging on by an emotional thread alongside you is David Walker. A long day today? Long Sunday for you?
Long Sunday, yep. An absolute Sunday league classic this morning for Ribblesdale Rovers. Pleased to say that we confirmed our status in JSF Plumbing and Heating League 4 with a wonderful victory against Q Antigua on the muddiest of pitches. We were clearing out water with plastic bags from a big puddle on the pitch before kickoff.
It wasn't
our usual home pitch, so we turned up with our nets that we use on our normal home pitch, and our nets were too small because there were stanchions on this goal, which meant that our net couldn't get over the back of them, so we had to borrow a net of someone else.
Oh, that is awful.
One of our players left to play golf at half time.
This is almost two Sunday league, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah, was this planned or did he just, the whim took him?
Well, we were short, so he was like, lads, I can help out, I can play, but I've got to go at half time.
I can give you 45 minutes.
Yeah, so we're like, okay, we'll take it. Someone went off after 5 minutes with a pulled hammy, and the winning goal was a massively deflected cross that looped into the top corner from out
Love
wide.
That.
So it superb.
Yeah. Mathematically safe.
Yeah.
Interested to know if the guy who left at half time produced both a below par performance at football and then under par performance at golf. Perhaps not. That would make him unreal at golf. So let's assume not. Yes, indeed. As Nick implied, the tour is reaching its climax. If you need London tickets, by the way, and you're listening to this in time, drop me a DM because there's a fair chance you'll be in time to pick up a couple of spares that are floating around people who need takers. So get in touch. This is your very, very last chance to join what is a cultural phenomenon in my eyes, my very tired eyes. Right, Adjudication Panel. We focused a little on this recently. Football's Guy Mowbray moonlighting on BBC's Gladiators, which overall, Nick, I think is a superb recreation, a superb reboot of the original. Have you caught any of it?
I haven't, but my my club loyalties, being a Forest fan, feels like I should watch it just to support Klatz. Klatz being on the books at Forest
of
these days.
Of course!
Yeah, referee Klatz.
How do you feel about that?
Stupid and
batshit. Yeah,
and I'm embarrassed every time it's called.
Good. It's such a fringe continental move as well by Marinakis, and that's absolutely fine. But yes, here is indeed Football's Guy Mowbray on Gladiators, drifting back into football.
Jake is forcibly pushed from the power ball pitch by Nitro. What's that from Finlay? Oh, he scored! Oh, the crowd's gone wild. I don't believe that.
Dave, it's like he's forgotten he's a football commentator. Someone's asked him to do it again, and he's sort of cobbled it together. It's like it's from a really bad computer game.
Yeah, it's just all a bit weird, isn't it? It just doesn't feel like Guy Mowbray is obviously one of the best commentators around, but it just
he's glad he has a commentator
quite,
to me now.
He doesn't quite know how to whether to go for it, whether to hang back, whether to make it football-y, whether to not make it football-y. You needed Jonathan Pearce. Come on, that's who we needed.
Interesting theory, Dave. Nick, do you think Guy Mowbray has the handbrake on when it comes to gladiators?
I mean, it just really does sound like he's second guessing himself. So when you say you needed Jonathan Pearce, do you need someone with a bit? Well, sound be harsh, but someone with much less shame, perhaps, really going for it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm fondly remembering his days on Robot Wars and the gusto with which he tackled that particular assignment. But as we know, Jonathan Pearce very busy with his Ligue 1 duties these days. So.
Presumably there was a conversation in the Gladiators production team where they suggested Pearce and someone just said, too Robot Warsy.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, he may well have been in the conversation, actually, when they started to think about rebooting it. Elsewhere on popular TV, this came from Jack Sankey, who witnessed some stellar footy chat on Coronation Street this week.
Been practising my knuckleball. We should pop the red record on the way back.
You do not know what's a knuckleball.
What on earth is a knuckleball?
So it's a special sort of free kick, right, where you hit the ball a certain way and it moves in the air.
He's been trying to do it for years and he's never come close.
Wow. This I need to see.
Dave, a bold choice of football reference to go for knuckleball on a soap opera. And to a certain extent, I was quite impressed by the overall kind of tone and content of that conversation. But where it sort of fall down in its realism is that he refused to cite Didier Drogba and Cristiano Ronaldo as the exponents of knuckleball, which is by law what you must do.
Yeah, how granular could we have got? You know, what you got to do is you got to position the valve in front of it, so you hit
that's
that.
What was missing for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, I can't decide whether I like this or not. I mean, it's definitely better and more convincing than your average soap opera footballing small talk, but it also is still a bit weird. Would anyone be talking about that? Oh, I've been practicing the old knuckleball. It's too knowing. It's like maybe it's trying a little bit too hard. They've gone a bit too far the other way.
Nick, elsewhere on Coronation Street, there was a pub scene, I think possibly this week too, where Steve McDonald, the ever beleaguered Steve McDonald, still in it, was chatting about changing his allegiance of his football team. Don't know who he supports in the soap. It might be Weatherfield County, I assume it is. And they were talking about whether he could start supporting City or United. And then the person he was with saying he could go hipster and support West Didsbury and Chorlton. So they're going deep these days. It's not generic rubbish anymore. It's, you know, they're going really topical.
Maybe they've got someone in. They've got a football consultant in who's just trying to sneak in as many kind of niche things as possible.
I bet it's Brian's gun.
Yeah. it does feel a little bit like that. I mean, presumably West Didsbury and Chorlton are ripe for a high-profile celebrity takeover with accompanying documentary.
Very possibly. There's someone with a West Didsbury and Chorlton scarf. One of the football cliches after show parties. So, yeah, the reach is, it's there. I call them the Dulwich of the North and he hated that. So maybe that's my ignorance. Right, let's get back to actual football. Nick, this came from Michael Kashani, who was watching Roma against Brighton in the Europa League last week. Roma were 4-0 up with 17 minutes to go and the commentator said this.
Two goals in 3 minutes. Let's just completely turn this tie on its head.
Our correspondent, Nick, semi-justifiably pointing out that being 4-0 up or scoring two goals to become 4-0 up does not turn a tie on its head, and certainly not in the first leg. This is a terrible example of turning on head.
Yeah, it's almost like he's remembered that there were two goals scored and then forgotten who scored the first one. If Roma were 1-0 down, then scored two in 3 minutes or whatever. That's absolutely classic turning on head, even if it is the first leg. But I genuinely think that's what he might have done, just forgotten who scored the first goal.
Dave, can you defend this in any way? Because, I mean, it is the first leg still, and you know, for a bit of extra context, some mitigation, Brighton were sort of controlling the game to a certain extent at 2-0 down. So they weren't out of it. Is that still allowed? I mean, there's still a lot of football to be played in this tie at that point.
You kind of get the sentiment, if the words aren't quite right, but you've gone from being 2-0 up, from Brighton's point of view, being 2-0 down, as you say, still in the game. They're thinking maybe this isn't a disaster. We've got a lot of football to play, got a second leg. But then all of a sudden you find yourself 4-0 down. So the direction hasn't changed, but it has been taken away from them. They are in a much worse position all of a sudden. The tie
dramatic change.
Yeah.
But, you know, we hear the phrase turning on, the tie has been turned on its head so often that, you know, there should be rules. And this fails all of those flouts all of those, doesn't it? So don't like it. Right, let's get back to domestic matters. The title race. This Premier League title race, Nick, would you say it's the most potentially over to you end to a Premier League season ever? How many times do you reckon, what's the over and under we're going to hear that phrase over the next 10 Premier League match days?
Particularly as there's only one more game like between the three combatants. So
that's good then, isn't it? That lends itself to over to Eunice.
All the games will presumably be quite nicely spaced out. If, say, Liverpool are playing the early game on the Sunday and City are playing the later game on the Sunday, is that over to you or is that attention turns? It's over to you, isn't it?
Oh, it's definitely over to you, because over to you is a more specific subsection of attention turns because they're linked. But that raises another question, actually. Dave, can you have an over to you that spans two different days? Can an over to you go from 5:30 Saturday to, I don't know, 2 p.m. Sunday? Is that allowed? It is, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, I could easily see Arsenal playing, you know, on a Saturday lunchtime or, as you say, Saturday tea time. And although, so now Arsenal are top now, aren't they? So I think an over to you, does it suit more if Liverpool go top on Saturday and Arsenal can go top on Sunday if they win? That's an over to you more than if the team that's already top win and temporarily extend their lead.
I haven't got a fucking clue what you're on about, but
if Arsenal were top and they won on Saturday, thus extending their lead temporarily, that's less of an over to you than if they got top temporarily and Liverpool could take it back the next day by winning.
I think they're so close. There's obviously 1 point separating three teams that it works either way. I think if there was even one or two more points of a gap, then there might be some differentiation there. But yeah, I think it works for both.
Hey, I don't think you absolutely have to be able to leapfrog the other team to go top again after an over to you, as long as you stay in touch and you're mathematically well in the title race. So an over to you is fairly open, but you do need to be in with a tremendous shout. So it is only one of the three. But if there aren't that many top of the table clashes left amongst the title contenders, Nick, what does that do for the rival exclamation of "and breathe"? Can you "and breathe" when it's just one team in the title race in a particular game?
So see if teams A and B win their games and then team C is on the late on Sunday. It's a scrappy 1-0, 2-1 win where they score fairly late on. Is that an "and breathe" kind of situation?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So a double header "and breathe". Okay. Yeah, okay. I'm all right for that. Okay. Let's go over to Arsenal then, who made the first move of the three this weekend with their late win over Brentford. Not late, just late. Just one late. Robinho gets in touch, Dave, and says, "Alan Smith on Sky described Declan Rice's header as a great take. Can this be right? At the very least, I've always thought take could only be applied to a finish with the foot. What kind of finishes can be described in such a way?" This isn't it part of an increasing trend, Dave, of kind of anti-header sentiment from us? Well, from me at least. I think headers just don't qualify for certain things. But I've never ever considered this. I don't really use it very often. Take. Can you have it with header? What a great take that is. It's a lovely take. But with a header?
Instinctively doesn't feel right, does it?
No take is a thing, but I can't think exactly how it's used.
It is kind of. It's just
taken that well. Oh, okay.
Taken it well.
So it's an extension of that. But you can't take a chance with your header, can you, Nick? No, it's a finish. It's a finish with a foot.
It implies some degree of like having a bit of time. And there are very, very, very limited situations where a header takes time in that same way. So yeah, it just doesn't feel right.
Takes his chance with the header. And this, I'm so glad you said that, because this digs up the old grave of you can't pick your spot with a header. And so many people disagree, but I know I'm right. I'm absolutely bang on about it. So this is just a cousin of that. So elsewhere, Ben Wilson gets in touch, Dave, and says, after Kai Havertz's winner for Arsenal on Saturday, Conor McNamara on BBC Radio 5 Live said this.
From a deeper position, Havertz arrives central, gets his header into that corner, Flecken dives and just pushes it, couldn't do enough as it just goes into the roof of the net. The celebrations, the roof comes off the Emirates.
Lift off for Arsenal at home against Brentford, a game that was beginning to trouble them.
Dave, Ben Wilson asks, that can't be lift-off because they'd already been 1-0 up and they'd already lifted off. Can you re-lift off? To me, lift-off has to be the opening / breakthrough goal, and usually when it's taken longer than you may have expected for it to come.
Yeah, or it could be an early goal as well, I think.
Yeah, in Champions League night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like Luke Shaw scoring in the final for England, you know, early doors, like lift-off at Wembley.
Lift-off is certainly not a deadlock-breaking situation. There's no tension to lift-off, is there, Nick? It's just, you're off to a great start, actually. Yeah, so if anything, it lends itself to early goals.
Liftoff is very Clive Tildesley kind of early 2000s Champions League games, like a first leg or second leg at Old Trafford against Juventus or someone, and you know, Andy Cole scores. That's the very, very specific situation that I think of for Liftoff.
Yeah. As for whether you can you lift off, obviously not. But could it be akin to the moment where a space shuttle detaches from the rocket and goes stratospheric, goes into the atmosphere?
That's kicking on, though, isn't it? That's more like using a different propulsion system.
The Space Shuttle Challenger has really kicked on into the low Earth atmosphere there.
I suppose you've got the lunar lander, which then lifts back off the moon. That wasn't responsible for the original lifting off the Earth. So, no. If anything, it's claiming the credit. So... don't like it. But you know, you can't have Liftoff for 2-1 Conor McNamara, although I understand the sentiment, because maybe it was a bigger picture lifting off for their title hopes, but if anything they were just carrying on where they left off. Fuck. Very rare that we get the audio for this on Clichés, but delighted to have it. This, in all its glory, was the promo montage for Liverpool versus Manchester City just before kickoff.
A rivalry for the ages reaches its epic conclusion as two juggernauts meet for the final time. But how did we get here? The series starts in Germany over a decade ago. Both won trophies, but Pep took the titles. Season 1, the battle begins. Klopp drew first blood, but neither took the trophy. Season 2 starts with a thrashing. The Reds strike back to crush City's Champions League dreams, but they ultimately can't stop the Centurions. Season 3 was settled by the finest of margins. Liverpool went close, but not close enough. Until finally, in Season 4, the Reds got their revenge. The next three seasons brought battles for the ages, and while Liverpool took a cut, City took the leads. Now, for the final time, one last showdown. Klopp versus Guardiola, the series finale.
Nick, this is a 4 out of 10 effort. Sky should be better than this.
That was excruciating. It was a kind of 10-15 second idea that stretched out to a minute. If you even think the premise was any good at all, sitting there for the full minute of that.
Do you know what?
Here we go.
I think there's a specific reason why it doesn't work. I actually quite enjoyed seeing all the footage of all the seasons, and you sit there and you think, God, actually, they have been going at it for like longer than we think, and there's been a lot of great matches and stuff over the years.
That's the job of any montage, is to ram it home. Okay.
And I think they did a good job at that, and it looks nice. But I think they've gone for this kind of deliberately like Hollywood epic blockbuster trailer
Oscar
style.
Night, of course.
Yeah, so. But trailers aren't like this anymore. Trailers haven't been like this for over 10 years or more. You don't get big American deep voice voiceover in a world. You don't get that anymore. Trailers are just footage, cleverly edited bits of the film. And it jars a bit. It's a bit old fashioned.
Yeah, it should have been loads of a flurry of action, then sudden silence. And then you think everything's going to be all right. And then, whoa. And then they're just like Mo Salah driving into the area out of nowhere.
Is it a single piano note for some reason?
Right at
the end.
And maybe the Sky theme tune played very slowly on Plinky Plonky Piano after that.
You'll never stop this flame.
It's all very thin, and then it fades out, and then...
Bernardo Silva just suddenly appearing on screen, screaming at the camera. But finally, what really disappointed me about this montage, Dave, was the kind of COD American voiceover. They got someone at the last minute for this, didn't they? Maybe it's Patrick Davison.
Yeah, the pronunciation of Guardiola at the end was a bit...
I mean... I don't envy anyone having to put on an American accent for various vowel sounds. But
you don't think they were American? You think that's an accent? I think they probably
I don't want to
speculate
too much. But
I think they were American. I think
you'd hope so. Yeah. I mean, they must be able to find one, right? God. But yeah, there you go. It's a difficult job making these. And there you are. Now, if you thought that was concerning, Nick, what are you going to think about this? Mere minutes after Manchester City had taken the lead at Anfield with a very, very clever corner from Kevin De Bruyne and John Stones. They won another corner at the same end. Peter Drury said this.
So De Bruyne embraced by the City fans right behind him here. We've already sucked in a John Stones goal at that end.
The away fans sucking the ball in at Anfield. This cannot be allowed. Was that part of the redevelopment? it's part of the planning permission. You can extend Anfield, but you will have to let away fans suck the ball in.
It was on the other side of the goal to where all the fans were. So even if they were sucking it in, then it would have gone in another direction. exactly. to where it actually went.
Such are the vagaries, Dave, of the layout behind that goal at Anfield. It's the Anfield Road end, isn't it? So I'd say the Liverpool half, the Liverpool fans' half of that stand cover about 40% of the goal.
Mm.
And that happened to be the 40% of the goal that the ball went into from John Stones.
Yeah.
So if anyone, unless Man City fans were doing some very precise diagonal sucking, yeah, it wasn't them doing it.
They could suck the ball into the corner at the end if they were trying to hold on to a lead, perhaps. That would work, but yeah. Otherwise,
first time I've ever heard of the away fans sucking a ball in at Anfield, let alone not at the Kop end. So who knows? Maybe the phenomenon is becoming more democratic in the Premier League. And rightly so, more fair, isn't it? So I instinctively really like this observation, and then I doubted myself, Nick. So let's see what you think. Alex and Sean from No Score Draws got in touch and said, after Jeremy Doku's late reprieve against Liverpool, when he almost gave away a penalty, why are players who get away with a rash tackle without a penalty / red card always referred to as lucky boy and never ever as lucky man? And I thought, well, that is right, isn't it? Because the commentator always says, oh, he's a lucky boy. And it is always in those scenarios. But then, do they ever say lucky man? I think they might.
I don't know. I don't think they do. Because it's like there's always a tone of like admonishment. You know,
Yes.
It's teacher saying, well, you've got away with it this time, boy. But
so it's quite condescending, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Definitely.
And that's the crucial aspect. It's like a lecture, Dave, isn't it?
Yeah, it implies a sort of mischievous, perhaps naive schoolboy, yeah, who has, as Nick says, got away with it. Because if you hear, oh, he's a lucky man, it just doesn't have that same ring to it.
Yeah, you're right. I completely agree. And that brings us to the end of the first half of the adjudication panel. That's the topical matters for Sunday taken care of. Let's look at the bigger picture next. Welcome back to Football Clichés. The adjudication panel continues with this. Now, Nick, I no longer labour under the assumption that Premier League players are responsible for their own Twitter feeds. So let's make that clear straight away. But news reaches me. This was tweeted by Felix Johnston that David Datro Fofana retweeted his own goal at half-time of West Ham versus Burnley. I just feel it was massively inauthentic social media use from his team.
The clip that he retweeted was almost certainly like some dodgy feed as well from somewhere, which made it even funnier. Just understand that the game's still going on. We all know. But come on, guys.
Well, if it was his team, at least they have actually waited until half time to give the, because they could have just done it straight away while he was sitting on the pitch, right?
I hope he gets fined for using his phone, because he has to keep that pretense that he is doing his own tweets. He's like, I'm just gonna have to take the rap for this, aren't
I? I'm all for it. I want to quote tweets at half time. Give us your thoughts. You've got time. It's not 15-minute team talk, is it? It's only a few minutes. You've got time to have a look on your phone. It's okay.
What about iPhone notes apologies if you get booed off at halftime?
Exactly.
We go again in 14 minutes' time. Yeah.
Stick with us.
No, this is good. Elsewhere, Dave Kay gets in touch. And Nick, there's this little spotted phenomenon in football of when goals are scored during minutes applauses. And it's rare, but it is in some ways quite unfortunate. This might be an offshoot of this. This is from Villa Park, just after John McGinn has clattered into Destiny Your Doggy.
The challenge from McGinn would always seem likely to bring a card from Chris Cavanagh. Oh, it's an aggressive... Oh, it's a red card!
I mean, that's tremendous, isn't it? Nick, I don't think I've ever heard a player get sent off while the crowd are chanting his name.
What's particularly enjoyable is that you heard the song and then you heard the kind of air taken out of the stadium minute when it was a very slightly unexpected red card. But there were still a few people who clearly weren't really watching the pitch, who carried on singing.
Crushing for them, Dave.
I presume they were chanting in part because of the tackle.
Because
it was a red card, right?
It was a wild challenge. It was also a rabble-rousing challenge as well, sort of a geeing. I mean, that's clearly the motivation for the tackle, was to drag Villa back into the game.
That's the thing, right? I'm slightly surprised that they were so surprised. You've seen it's a bad challenge, and it's inspired that reaction.
It was a horrible challenge, but I think it's probably the sort of foul that when you're in the stadium, you could not quite see how serious it was.
Yeah,
if you're watching on TV, and particularly with the replays, then it's very obvious.
It was a proper kind of booted him into the stand tackle as well. Like there wasn't any hint, Nick, of studs. It was just a booting.
Yeah,
and that's not not serious, clearly.
Weirdly, slightly reminded me of that thing that you sometimes see when a team are like 5-6 nil down right at the end of the game and they just go, oh, fuck this. I'm going to run around and booting people up in the air.
It was a weird loss of control, actually. It wasn't quite necessary. It didn't feel like it was quite that much frustration to be born from that. Anyway, other violence at Villa Park. Stuart Green had this observation. An amazing collective noise at the replays of Radu Dragosin taking one in the unmentionables.
Now Cash wins a corner out of Dragosin, who was a bit winded by the contact from the ball and the cross. Yeah. Speaking from personal experience, not something you like to see, that.
You heard, didn't you,
the collective groan.
That was a very sympathetic crowd noise, wasn't it?
Yeah. Look, even I knew it was coming. I've watched this clip before we did the show, and my legs instinctively still clenched together at seeing it again. It is bang on.
Right on target where the owl sleeps.
It really is, yeah.
I'm sure many of us have. I experienced this, and not only the act, but the collective at five-a-side last week when the ball hit me clean in the bollocks and I was in goal, and a lot of the people on the team did the same thing. So it was quite nice to sort of hear it live, really.
How quickly did you go down?
I didn't go down. I just kind of sort of crouched and...
Oh. Listen, fair play.
But Dave, quite a rare situation at football. I haven't heard many times the crowds react to a replay of that in the stadium.
I'm surprised they got a replay of that, though. Is it normal that you get a replay of a blocked cross in
really
a stadium?
Quickly as well, like straight after it happened, like TV style, which stunned me. But I didn't think it would be worth playing back to the stadium. No. But the second thing is, if I played you that noise, that crowd noise, what would you have guessed that it was? I don't reckon you would have guessed player hitting the bollocks.
No, like, I don't know.
A shot that just whistled just past the angler post and bar, maybe? Something like that.
One of those, where it's maybe
a great hit.
Wasn't quite clear just how close it was on first glance, but when you see the replay.
Or, Nick, a goal that actually did go in and it curved, you know, unrealistically wide and then back in past a despairing goalkeeper, and they're all going, oh, like a proper purr of appreciation.
Are you kind of thinking that in the usual reaction to someone getting hit in the bollocks, there's more kind of mirth involved?
Quite similar sounds, it sounds like. Yeah,
a combination of ooh, but also chuckling.
Yeah. Basically, yeah, it didn't feel that lighthearted. It was genuine feel for you, mate. But yeah, as Dave correctly points out, it was plum in the plums. Yeah, we've descended into dancing around it, haven't we? Like we shouldn't do, but yeah, it's fine. There it is, in the bollocks. Right, Unai Emery reflected immediately after the game on Villa's 4-0 defeat, and very specifically said the second half was a very bad day at the office.
I mean,
I love that. I love it. Just a really short little day. The rest of it was fine.
Had a really big lunch. Just came back after lunch and just should have had.
Oh, we've been there. Yeah. Everyone's been there.
Yeah.
The two-pinter. Speaking of Spaniards unexpectedly adopting some colloquial English phrases, Barcelona boss Xavi was talking about starlet Lamine Yamal after their win over Mallorca this weekend. He says it wasn't his best game for us, but he is capable of making the difference with ease. We've seen it today. He cuts inside, looks up to the goal, and sends the ball to the top bins. I had no idea they used this on the continent. No idea whatsoever.
Two things here. He said the top bins rather than just top bins, which I don't know.
Don't like it. The Arsenal.
Yeah, exactly. But also, do we think this is like, do you think he actually said top bins in Spanish, or is this sort of a similar idiom that someone has translated into something more, you know, the English audience would be more familiar with?
Either situation is possible.
It could potentially be one of those things where...
Not a bit of both.
No, not a bit of both. But it could be where you're like hearing Xavi speaking in Spanish, but then he just out of nowhere just says top bins in English.
I really want that to be it the most. I hoped and dreamed, Nick, that it was a broadcast interview that got transcribed. And the only interview I could find after that game was Xavi speaking in perfect English. I had to say, out of sheer ignorance, I didn't know he spoke such good English. So it's entirely possible that he did say top bins in English, and that's exactly faithfully reported. Hope so. I mean, what could it be in Spanish? Surely they don't have top bins in Spanish. Maybe. But we don't really know where top bins even came from, Dave.
It's funny you should say that, because I was having this exact conversation with cliche superfan Rob O'Flaneur at the at the Dublin live show, after the Dublin live show, we were talking, we somehow got onto like where the owl sleeps and all that, and then got onto top bins. And we were saying, like, where did that actually come from? Why is it called top bins? We've just accepted it as a thing.
Soccer AM, was it? Surely. Surely Soccer AM made a literal representation of top bins.
Latterly, they did, yeah. But was it like an early days? Did they say it in the early Lovejoy days or something? It feels like it could have been, but because where would the bin, why is there a, why would there ever be a bin in the top corner? I don't know.
Is it not Merce? Just a Merce thing from Soccer Saturday? I've got no direct recollection of him saying that, but I've always just assumed it's in that kind of field of, you know, worldy and beans on toast and all that kind of thing.
But they're all directly traced back to an obvious thing. Top bins isn't. Someone get in touch and let us know, because we need to open a line of communication on this.
So the Spanish for top bin is contenedor superior.
Oh, I like that. Falta subidas. And and the rest of it. I'm all right. Yeah, fine. Sounds very... I mean, you've seen the way they report their injuries. So the fact that top bins could be... translated into something as ridiculous as that sounds very plausible. Right, final question of the adjudication panel comes from Will Clark. He says, the Sky commentary said Everton found themselves 2-0 down to Manchester United. Is that the most found yourself scoreline? Can you find yourself 3 or 4 down? Instinctively, Dave, I think no, because 2-0 is the perfect thing for this, because going 1-0 down isn't spectacular enough. It's not enough of a predicament necessarily. 3 or 4, you should have realised your situation by then. 2-0, finding yourself 2-0 down is like waking up somewhere dubious and going, what the hell happened? You know, it's like the hangover, isn't it? So finding yourself 2-0 down, going, oh shit, what's going on here?
In an episode earlier in the year, we talked about players who find themselves in the box, whatever, and we sort of decreed that it was
post. Defenders
who've ventured upfield in a strange moment or stay up after a corner and the ball comes back to them or whatever. And I think it's a similar thing, exactly. It's an unexpected situation, it's caught you napping. It has to be early, doesn't it? It has to be early on. You can't find yourself 2-0 down 60 minutes in.
So being caught napping is quite crucial here, Nick. It's like suddenly, you know, going briefly unconscious and then waking up to find that you think, oh, shit. My pants are down and I'm 2-0 down.
Not again.
But even more than that, Nick, what place does this phrase have in the football language? Like, why is it... What purpose does it solve to say a team find themselves 2-0 down? Is it just like, well, just emphasising the misadventure of it all? It's like, well, they've sleptwalked to 2-0 down.
Is it almost like that they've been the better team, but they somehow find themselves 2-0 down?
Yeah, okay.
Because that sort of fits with the Everton United game on Saturday.
That is an interesting... Yeah, I think it definitely works in that case as well.
Because it's out of their control. It's almost like it's not their doing. To them.
We've had all the shots. We've had all the possession. We're 2-0 down here. What's happened here? Sort of thing. Yeah. But what about like the most famous calamitous kind of unexpected scoreline of modern times is obviously the Germany-Brazil semi-final. What was the point in that game? Could they have found themselves 4-0 down in that one? What did it get to before it kind of... What was the real moment where everyone was like, wow...
It was 4-0 after about sort of 22, 23 minutes, wasn't it? So that was the. I think they were too bad in the game. It's not like it was 4 goals against the run of play.
Very 2-0 down after 23. So they found themselves 2-0 down. Tony Kroos quickly made it 3-0 after 24 minutes. And then it was 4-0 after 26 minutes, then 5 after 29. So
all of a sudden you found yourself from being sort of similar to the Brighton-Roma game earlier on, 2-0 and comfortable, but then all of a sudden you're 5-0 down. They found themselves 5-0 down after 29 minutes. Maybe not.
I think I like it. I think we got close to nailing this. Anyway, speaking of people waking up in random places with their pants down, it's time for Keys and Grey Corner. Right, only two things for you in Keys and Grey, but they are both blinding. The second of them was deleted by beIN Sports social media team, but I got the video in time. So, brilliant. Is this allowed? Who knows? They put it out there. It was broadcast. That's the main thing. Number one, this is the story, Nick, if you can call it that, of Sonny Singil, who was the first British South Asian to referee a Premier League game this weekend, being caught on camera signing autographs just before the start of the second half. And this harks back to Mossy's boots, of course, in Keyes's eyes, as a crime against humanity. That's it of the first tranche of analysis from the Bein boys.
What do we think, boys?
Not for me.
I don't know. I know he got battered by Mike Dean.
Well, what? Never mind, Mike. What are our thoughts?
I don't agree. I don't agree with him. I don't agree with her.
Yeah, no, I'd rather he didn't. But at half time.
Why is he doing it?
He was asked.
Oh, he's asked.
You see, that's Mike. I disagree with Mike. I think that he was in a very invidious position there. He was asked by a 10, 12 year old guy.
Yes.
Would you mind signing this? What's he to do? If he'd ignored him,
we'd get battered.
We'd have hammered him.
Social media would batter him.
Okay, so a promising start to this analysis, Nick. Immediate disgust and games gone vibe, and then sort of rational thought kicked in and went, it would have been weirder if he'd said no to a kid to signing an autograph. It didn't affect him because he was just waiting around in the tunnel anyway. It's all okay. So an okay start. I mean, hopefully they're bringing themselves back to rational thought here, but also slightly concerning that they think this is in any way disgusting behaviour.
Keyes teed it up in a very, obviously everyone agrees with me that this is disgusting. And then in perhaps a slightly un-Keyes way, he then went along with the kind of, oh, actually, no, it's fine, rather than...
Yeah, and I think rather than lumping them all in together here, it's very much McAteer who's aghast at this. Gray is sort of, he's a bit on the fence, but I think he's kind of doesn't mind too much. And Dwight York and Keyes seem to be on the same page, voice of reason. But McAteer weirdly out of step with his colleagues here.
It's going to unravel from here. You think that would be the end of it? That's all you would ever need to say about this non-incident. This is clip 2 of 3.
The only problem is, Andy, for me, it's part of a growing trend of giving the officials far too much airtime. And it comes from the top. I mean, Mr. Showbiz himself, Howard Webb, who I'm told opened the fridge the other night and did 10 minutes when the light came on.
10? That's good.
He sets the tone, and they're trying to make characters of them all. And I don't think it's the right way to go.
So this was inevitable, Dave. The second wave of analysis here was inevitable. It was going to go bigger picture, and it was going to go on about referees seeking the limelight. It's them talking about it. I mean, this seems such an obvious point to make. And this is the kind of case against a lot of this sort of stuff. But this is such an overt example of, you're fucking talking about it. Why are you talking about it?
He's not seeking the limelight. Referees don't seek the limelight at all. I mean, a few isolated examples maybe, but like, again, it's just an excuse to get a dig in at Howard Webb as well, completely contradicting their otherwise rational thought at the start of this. You're giving them the limelight. You're putting the spotlight on them.
Yeah. In other limelight news, Nick, if we were really going to drill down into the phrase seeking the limelight, which is so often thrown at referees, all referees really. If anything, Sonny Singil here wasn't seeking the limelight. If anything, he was behaving commensurately with the limelight that he was given. Well, there was no more limelight sought. Someone asked him for his autograph and he gave them it.
Yeah, apart from anything else, he's standing in the tunnel. If he was really seeking the limelight, surely he'd be out in the middle of the pitch where everyone else could see him.
Interesting point you make there, because in the third wave of their analysis, it gets very ludicrous.
Perhaps they should just wait in an area where they aren't going to get asked, maybe stay inside the tunnel. I mean, if he's outside the ground walking to his car and kids come up to him, I appreciate that. That's going to happen.
But he's not going to...
He's put himself in a position there where he can be asked, isn't he? Just stay out of the way. Just stay out of the way.
It's a bit like the Lino in the Arsenal game. He can't say no.
If you go in the tunnel and you're near a pen, you're asking for trouble.
You would get criticised the way,
stay in the tunnel and just come run out.
We've long since moved to a place where referees used to be seen and not heard.
Yeah, of course.
I think he probably took him by surprise as well, too. And he feel obliged at that time to sort of respond to something instinctively.
Should I
sign it or should I not?
And
I think he was in a very difficult position.
Mike Dean's no really in a position to be battering referees.
No, agreed. No. If that had been a mate of his, perhaps he'd have protected him a little more.
Wow. Oh, yes.
Like Michael Oliver.
Yeah.
Oh, this is like a little Keyes-y mega mix now, Nick.
The thing I quite like about it is that if it was anyone else, you could picture that this came about because they've got a producer in their ear saying, whatever that they were about to do, it's been delayed. You need to vamp a bit and fill some time. But this is 100% sort of the producer in their ear going, just move on, guys. And no, seriously, move on. He's really running with this.
Dave, do you think at any point in this Premier League season, even as the title race hots up, we're going to see some better analysis of anything related to football than where a referee should stand at the start of a second half before the game kicks back off?
Bizarre.
In case they might get approached for a signature.
What's he supposed to do? Poke his head out the tunnel just to, is the coast clear? Are there any kids around with pens?
No, they explicitly said what they should do is they should wait in the tunnel out of sight and then run out straight away for the second half and don't dawdle anywhere near a fan who might ask you for the autograph and end civilization in the process.
Stare straight ahead. Don't even look at
them. You know, and none of them even seemingly considering, but with the exception of maybe Dwight York, who was, of course, again, quite sympathetic at the end there. But I don't know why this kid has asked for the referee's signature, but he is, by virtue of the role that he's playing, being the first British South Asian referee in the Premier League, you know, he is a notable figure. He's a role model. Like, there might be kids looking up to him or whatever.
Yeah, conceivably. But that probably wasn't the reason he was asked
maybe
for his autograph.
Not, but like,
it's just a kid at a game with a programme in their hands and someone of some standing is in nearby and it's just automatic. You get asked for your autograph.
Mm. Do you think this, did the assistants go up after and go, jump? No, okay, no, don't worry.
No, fuck off. Waving away the rough, fuck off. Overall, Nick, whilst there is a kind of a reasonable deference to the actual logical explanation here, this sums up a course of argument that you see a lot, especially with games gone discourse, which infuriates me so much, which is kind of logical explanation for something, everyone agrees, but still. You can't have the but still. You've already explained it. It's so annoying. It's such a ridiculous way of arguing something. I still want to make the point, but still. And then you go with this vague bigger picture shit. It's so annoying.
Yeah, it's like they're sort of trying to justify their instincts, despite having proved that their instincts are bullshit.
Right, second on Keys and Grey Corner. This time, this was deleted by beIN's Twitter account. This was following Pep Guardiola's interview with beIN Sports, in which he was just Pep Guardiola. He gave very short, not massively into it answers to vague questions about the game. And this was Keys' reaction to his manner.
If I'm Andy Kerr, I end that because that is a farce. I don't know why he bothers.
It's,
I know contractually he has to come out, but you've nothing more to contribute than that, Pep Guardiola. Don't bother. If I'm Andy Kerr there, I just say, listen, I've got a job to do.
Yes, right? Yes. Andy Kerr has got a job.
I know you have too. So respect me and my profession and actually make a bit of an effort. Or...
don't do it.
I'm not going to bother.
Oh, don't do it.
And I'd walk away. Because I think that's a disgrace.
The game was worth more than
an absolute disgrace. He should come out there and contribute. We City's fans deserve better than that.
Here's something, right? We haven't seen it, and I don't know, right? I haven't seen it, but I don't know. Jurgen Klopp will come out and be the absolute opposite, in my opinion, to what we've just seen. He'll be engaging.
Who does he
think
he is? He'll
be engaging. He'll be open, and he'll tell you what he thinks.
Who does he think he is? He's looked at Andy Kerr there almost. What? Can't be bothered. It's just wrong.
I agree.
It's not good.
I think the game was worth more than a couple of one-word answers.
I think a professional deserves better and more respect than that. And I think he's shown him none.
No, none at all. He never does, Richard.
It's time he was called out.
Yeah, well...
because it's wrong. It's totally wrong. Mm. Don't bother. Because that's,
I mean, to be
nonsense.
Fair, Andy's asked him, has tried to interview him after a great game that we've all enjoyed.
That's my point.
That's nip and tuck, could have gone either way. And have we learned anything about how City felt about it or what he felt about it? Not really. Not really.
It's glorious.
Sensational from Andy Gray. It's twice saying, I don't know, I haven't seen it, but in my opinion, Jurgen Klopp will come out and be better than that.
Not massively unjustified, I suppose. There is a body of evidence there, but so fucking what? Honestly. The best thing, I think, is Keezy upholding some sort of moral code, Nick, here about how people should behave around the media. You know, they need us. That's the vibe he's giving.
The two things that I particularly enjoyed was an absolutely elite example of Andy Gray just agreeing with Keezy when Keezy said he's got a job to do, and then Andy Gray said he has got a job to do. Yes, he has got a job to do.
Absolutely right.
And then who does he think he is? Who does he think he is?
Who
Pep Guardiola.
Does he think he is?
Who does he think he is? It's a farce.
It's Pep Guardiola, mate.
It's a farce.
beIN didn't want the world to see it, and let's face it, no one else in the world was watching it either. So,
well, all eyes or attention's turned to the blog. As we record this on Sunday night, we await the blog on Monday afternoon, and it feels like we've seen a little precursor of what could end up in there.
I was about to say, I think this could be a personal best, a world record, in fact, for Keezy's blog essentially being a verbatim transcript of what he essentially said in three social clips on Beard Sports Twitter account. Easy work for him, Nick. I'll just write that down again.
Yeah, just get one of the runners at being to transcribe it.
Dwight York spending most of that conversation going, why do we care about this? don't give
is
a
it
shit.
Trying to remember how much he's getting paid for doing this and wondering if it's still worth it.
As are you, I hope. right. right. Yeah. Nick, thank you for your adjudication panelling.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Dave Walker.
Thank you.
Who do you think you are? Thanks for everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time. See you later.
Sports Social Podcast Network.